wine, drugs, and an unhealthy debate. I should warn you now, I'm a dedicated proponent of a non-communicable disease. The debate has been stirred by a report by Professor David Nutt, the former UK chief drugs advisor, published in The Lancet called Drug Harms in the UK. However, it continues a debate we had at the recent European Wine Bloggers Conference as well, on freedoms, rights and responsibilities. What I discovered in that interesting session in Vienna, presentations by Adam Watson-Brown from the EU Commission, George Sandeman from Wine in Moderation, and Ken Payton, a blogger at Reign of Terroir, was exactly how governments and official bodies think of alcohol, and it makes a big difference in understanding their approach to the debate. In this debate, there is no wine. There are no spirits. There are no alcopops, RTDs, artisanal cordials, or even record-breaking alcoholic beverages. There is no good alcohol or bad alcohol. There is only alcohol. Alcohol is not a feature of a beverage, a natural byproduct of age-old techniques, nor even an industrial process. Alcohol is a drug, and its consumption is a non-communicable disease. In other words, alcohol is seen as a disease to be eradicated. Before I go any further, I should state that I agree that alcohol abuse is a problem in many societies and a factor in many problems, but I believe alcohol is also very different from most of the other drugs listed in Professor Nutt's study, and so this debate is very unhealthy. Let me explain how. The chart that we've seen online shows alcohol harming most to oneself and to others, over and above heroin, crack, cocaine, tobacco, and so on. The chart illustrates, according to a long list of criteria relating to the harm to the individual and also to the society, that alcohol comes top of the list, and so delivering to the world's media the nicely controversial headline, "Alcohol is more harmful than heroin." What this chart and this way of thinking completely misses, in my opinion, is that this is only half the story. It's like banning bridges because they can be used to jump off. Take a look again at the list, but from a different perspective. Which of these items listed contribute to individuals and society, if any? Where are the benefits? I think most of us would be very hard-pressed to say that crack, methamphetamines and heroin contribute to society in any meaningful way. Heroin is interesting. Unlike alcohol, this chart doesn't list opiates, where heroin equals bad, but medically administered morphine equals good. However, the two legal drugs on the list, tobacco and alcohol, do. I'm not going to make the case for tobacco. Others can do that. But even here, there are some benefits to society from taxation, even if they are outweighed by the costs. But alcohol is different. Let's take wine, but you could argue a similar case for beer and some spirits too. The benefits include huge revenue streams from duty and VAT receipts to the Treasury, vast numbers of people employed in production, supply, retail, marketing and distribution, not just winemakers, but bar and pub owners and staff, importers, wine shop assistants, glass manufacturers, cork companies, shipping companies, label printers, designers, journalists, educators and so on. Sustainable environmental benefits from land cultivated, often where little else would be viable, and people making a living in rural areas instead of moving to cities. Developing tourism infrastructure around regions dependent on wine production, and thousands of years of historic and cultural legacies in production and consumption. I'm not even going to touch on the contentious issue of potential individual health benefits from moderate drinking. I'm not in a position to quantify these benefits, but I'm sure others, such as the Wine and Spirits Trade Association, might. However, it's obvious that these benefits do exist. One of the main reasons this needs to be taken into account is because the blunt weapons of punitive taxation and medical warnings can disproportionately reduce the benefits instead of reducing the harm. Raising taxes on alcohol might cut consumption rates, but it also costs jobs and tax revenue. It reduces the margin and incentive to increase quality for retailers and producers, because our products are less affordable. This benefits large brands less connected to any local cultural investments and are driven by sales volume growth, which is the opposite of the policy's aim. It won't be just those who are abusing alcohol the most that are affected, but everyone. The approach is backfiring. We already have some of the highest taxes in the world, yet their own evidence shows that things are still not improving. I went to the EWBC hoping to make the point that wine blogging can have a positive impact on society through education and reconnecting consumers with the cultural roots of wine enjoyment, so that alcohol may be consumed responsibly. I realised, sadly, that the anti-alcohol lobby wasn't just ignoring us, we weren't even speaking the same language. So how do we engage with the discussion? We have to change the rules of the debate they have set. It is time for much more concerted efforts by wine lovers and wine businesses. Unfortunately, printing messages on labels and adverts about drinking responsibly are not the answer. We need clearer data on the benefits of the alcohol trade to individuals, governments, countries and regions. We need to broaden out the debate about dealing with alcohol abuse from the purely medical to the cultural and economic areas too. And we need informed politicians willing to have a sensible debate about these points without fear of being pilloried by the media.